from KQED.
This is the California Report podcast. I'm Penny Nelson. Following the murder of 49 Muslim worshippers in New Zealand at Friday prayers, there will be stepped-up attention by law enforcement at mosques around California. I spoke with the president of the Muslim Public Affairs Council in Los Angeles, Salam Al-Mariati, about how his community is responding to last night's terrorism attack.
We're telling our community that it's time to stand tall against hate and to stand together as a community, as a people, as a country, because we need to be together today. Yesterday, what happened was horrific, seeing a white nationalist terrorist film himself spraying bullets on worshipers as they're kneeling and bowing and worshiping the Almighty. And we cannot let that intimidate us from being at mosque today. We will take all measures to make sure that our places of worship are secured.
And clearly, these terrorists knew what they were doing by shooting up a mosque on a Friday night.
Absolutely. They knew that Friday is what we call the congregational prayer. It's actually called Jum'ah prayer, which means congregation. All our prayers we can make by ourselves except the one on Friday. So they knew there was going to be maximum attendance on Friday at this mosque.
What's the response been from the LAPD?
They've already issued a statement in solidarity with the Muslim community, and they're telling us that they will have extra patrol, and they're asking if there's anything that we need from them, that they will be there. So we're talking to them, and we're talking to county law enforcement, the sheriff's office, and all the law enforcement agencies to make sure that the precautions that we need to do our Friday prayers today are going to be done, and while the mosques are going to be secured.
As far as you know, are there armed guards at mosques in and around Los Angeles?
No, we don't have armed guards. We do have security, but they tend to be unarmed. But they do have means of communications with law enforcement that's usually very close by.
Do you think this is going to affect mosques' willingness to welcome new faces or people from other faiths?
It's difficult to tell who's a stranger and who's not, because if you ever attend a mosque, it's usually people of all races and people of different ethnicities. So, number one, it's our obligation to welcome the stranger in our mosque. And number two, you can't tell who's who or who's from where. Our concern is also for our children. It's not just the adults who attend Friday prayer, but the children in schools who are bullied or have to watch the demonization of their own faith constantly on social media or even on network media. And that was actually the kerosene that was dashed all over the country in New Zealand. These incidents don't just happen spontaneously from somebody thinking of something. They're fed this hate from media, and then they act upon it. And I'm concerned also about our children and what they're going through and the bullying that they have to face every day. And now they're watching this. I think there's definitely a concern for post-traumatic stress disorder of many of our youth as they witness these horrific crimes against worshipers. And we're going to take measures and counseling them and talking to them and helping them walk through this. And they have to see us standing tall against hate. And I think that will be a source of strength for them and resolve to get through this day and to make tomorrow a better day.
That was Salam Al-Mariati, president of the Muslim Public Affairs Council in Los Angeles. Shifting gears now, teacher strikes from L.A. to Oakland have peppered the headlines this year. And yesterday, teachers in the San Joaquin Valley city of Madera also picketed. They aren't on strike yet, but union leaders say they're looking for more than just a salary increase. KVPR's Laura Tsutsui brings us this story.
We are Muta! We are Muta!
They're chanting, "We are Muta," Muta being the Madera Unified Teachers Association. Amanda Wade has taught elementary school here for 20 years and says that beyond salary and benefits, teachers want to be respected in this district of about 20,000 students.
And I believe our students deserve the best. And the best means a safe environment, not only for them, but for the teachers as well, for a hostile-free environment, and for a positive environment. And unfortunately, there are problems at schools that aren't like that.
Madera Superintendent Todd Lyle says that teachers have been prioritized. He cites a 13% pay increase over the last 3 years. But right now, he says the district is also trying to address decades of overcrowded schools.
We're at the point now where lunch starts at 10:30 in the morning for some of our kids to try to just get kids through the cafeteria because of the size constraints of the space with the number of students.
The last official negotiation between the two sides was back in October. A mediator is working to help find a compromise. The district plans to bring a revised offer to the union later this month. If an agreement isn't reached when the mediator is done, then the union could authorize a strike. For the California Report, I'm Laura Satsui in Fresno.
Well, in news out of Sacramento, this week brought reports that Governor Gavin Newsom is considering replacing the head of the CPUC. That's the commission that oversees utilities like PG&E. Michael Picker has headed the agency since 2014. The California Report's Lily Jamali's been looking into whether replacing him would help the CPUC regain the public trust. She spoke with Stephen Weissman, a former administrative judge at the agency.
Changing the leadership is not going to be a magic bullet. And current leadership moved in at a time of great challenge and has really done a lot, I think, to start moving the agency in a better direction. But there's no doubt about the fact that bringing in a fresh perspective, especially now, might be something to stimulate people in the staff and outside the agency to want to look at the commission and the possibilities of dealing with the current crisis in a different way.
Talk to me about how the role of the CPUC presidency has evolved over the years.
Traditionally, the president of the commission was just one of the five members who would be selected by his or her colleagues and would hold the gavel and run meetings for a certain period of time. And it wasn't until 20 years ago when Gray Davis was governor and signed a bill that created what people refer to as the strong presidency, where the president of the commission now is somebody who is selected by the governor, serves at the pleasure of the governor in that capacity, and has a much closer relationship with deciding all of the major priorities for the agency. During the 20-year period, there have only been three people who have been in that position. The electric industry itself has gone through dramatic changes during that period of time, and yet there's been very little changeover at the top of the agency.
So some would suggest that the CPUC is not an agency that currently has the public trust. What would it take for it to earn back that public trust?
The elements that I think are critically important are to have a strong ethical standard applied throughout the agency, to honor public participation. To function in the daylight is extremely important so that people can see the agency at work and also trust that it's not making all or most of its important decisions behind closed doors. And also to very actively and expressly do things that pursue the greater public interest rather than being an umpire that calls balls and strikes, being an agency that recognizes its responsibility to go out and discover what's most in the public interest in a particular situation and then do something to make that happen.
Stephen Weissman, lecturer at UC Berkeley's Goldman School of Public Policy. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And finally today, all those winter showers, they have blessed us with spring flowers. People have been flocking to see super blooms blossoming up and around the state and finding fields with as many butterflies as there are flowers. KQED's Mary Franklin Harvin has the story.
Welcome to the Wildflower Hotline. Widespread areas of flowers are blooming now and likely for the next few weeks.
That's the Wildflower Hotline at Borrego Springs Chamber of Commerce. Anza Borrego State Park near San Diego is one of the super bloom meccas in our state for wildflower chasers. With the wildflowers have come millions of painted lady butterflies, says Art Shapiro, a professor at UC Davis. He's been tracking butterflies in California for almost 50 years and says last year, painted lady and monarch butterfly populations were down. The monarchs by almost 90%. Shapiro has gotten calls from excited people who have seen the painted ladies and mistaken them for monarchs. It's easy to see why the butterflies get confused for one another. They both have similar orange and black coloring.
What I can tell you is that I am already getting messages from people who are seeing oodles of painted ladies down in the Southland and saying, this is wonderful. The monarch has been saved. Did we do it or did they save themselves? And they're not monarchs. They're painted ladies.
Officials at Anza Borrego say the superbloom is a consequence of well-timed El Niño rains in the desert. For the California Report, I'm Mary Franklin Harbin.
And that is the California Report podcast. Danny Bringer, Katie McMurrin, Seal Muller, Jim Bennett, and Rob Spate are our engineers. I'm Penny Nelson, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, featuring Listening to Mothers in California, a new survey that reveals what is and isn't working with maternity care in the Golden State, on the web at chcf.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.